Hello, and welcome back to And Just Like.
What? Just like what? What about it?
Just like, oh, I give up. Just like, fuck off.
What's the point? And just like, what's the meaning of this? And just like...
And just like, what?
And just like, what?
Welcome, my name is Luke Reeves, and I'm going to need a cigarette before this episode.
And my name is Melita Gandam, and maybe this series was a big mistake.
What's your, like, quick overall thoughts on this episode, Mel?
So I made the big mistake of watching it first thing in the morning. I made my morning coffee and sat down with it. I did it last week as well. I don't know why I keep doing it. It just ruins my day. It's just not something you should watch first thing in the morning. It's like late night TV. So I was texting Luke, because I think I watched it before him. I was like, this is awful. And there was just like, it's a fun episode, but there's just some really big clangers that I'm like, eek, this is not okay.
So, oh my god, there's so many clangers.
That's my TLDR.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I'm fairly agree. Like, what is MPK doing? Like, have a day off. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, so. Sorry, the general consensus is that people are a bit sick of him. Like, from what I've seen on Twitter, and then from our lovely followers on Instagram, everyone's like, what is he doing? And what has he done to
literally
this poor show?
Like, just give Samantha Irby, who did, yeah, like, last week's episode, like, reins to the show. She's so good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, agreed. All this stuff that you kind of like and think is funny and just like that is more than often than not written by her, I've realised.
From listening
to the writer's room. When they're like, oh yeah, when Samantha Irby wrote this scene, it's like, oh, that's a scene that I liked. And that makes sense that it was written by Samantha Irby.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Right. So
let's get into it.
Let's get into episode 8, season 2, title 100 Years Ago. So the Writers' Room podcast, they named this episode 100 years ago, and they were like, sometimes you just can't get to a good title name for an episode. And it was like, this immediately is a red flag. We all know 100 years ago, like, what the fuck? It makes no sense.
It's such a weird bizarre thing to obsess over, because everyone just says Sex and City season 2 episode 8 anyway. Like, it's fine.
I think they reasoned with this episode because it feels like 100 years ago when Miranda was a lawyer. It feels like 100 years ago when Kara and Eden were together. And it feels like 100 years ago when Charlotte was at work. It was like, take me back those 100 years, like, please.
We need a pun. The best episode names are like a right to shoes. Like, they're funny. Like, yeah. where's the puns, people? Where's the sass? No. Yeah, boring. But I think we're kind of putting off starting the first scene, which is... I hate. Richard Burton, what were you thinking?
Richard Burton, get on the sack strike, stop writing. Yeah, so we open up with the scene from outside the hotel window, and Carrie and Aidan are arguing whose turn is it to get up and close the shades, the curtains. So, like, I think they've obviously been in this hotel room for like a few days, and they've both been lounging around, and they're both obviously like super comfortable with themselves. So, like, I guess we're like a few weeks away from episode 7.
One of our followers on Instagram, like, was just messaged about this episode. She's like, just like, the first thing is just toes. Like, what's with... It's just too much. There's too much skin. I'm such a prude now.
Clearly Sarah Jessica Parker is really comfortable with John Corbett, like, because she's not really done a scene like this with any other actor. So maybe that's why they brought Aidan back.
Yeah, that's why they brought Aidan back.
This feels very, like, Tarantino-esque with all the foot on Aidan's chest and stuff.
Yeah. And then it's funny that they it's just a weird scene. Like, they want to show that all they're doing are fucking in this hotel room, ignoring the red flag that Aidan just does not want to go into Carrie's flat, which is such a big red flag and very
such
odd.
A red flag.
And then they're like laughing over this £26 omelette, which is probably a millionth of the price of what this hotel is costing them to fuck in every night.
Honestly.
Like, for a week. And it's we always forget that Carrie's got money, so why is she complaining about a $26 omelette?
Come on, Carrie. Guess it. And then this is basically what spurs on the whole chicken joke throughout this whole episode. Don't understand this chicken joke, like, whatever. not funny, bad writing from Offset.
Oh, there's so much stuff like toes, chickens and eggs, and just, oh, it's just really, you know, you get the ick, like you get like egg ick.
Ick.
I'm just not, foot fetishization has been destroyed by this scene alone. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Aiden's invited Carrie to his red brick in, where is it, Norfolk?
Norfolk, Virginia.
Virginia. So we cut to a scene with Carrie, Seema, Charlotte, and Miranda. Carrie's talking about how she's going to go to Aiden's red brick farmhouse in Norfolk, Virginia. And then she's going to meet Aiden's kids, who are 14, 17, and 20. Carrie's saying how gorgeous the farmhouse is. And Seema's, you can tell, like, Seema's, like, pulling a bit of side eye. And Carrie's like, oh, we want to invite you all guys for lunch. And Seema's a bit like, side eye. Then this potential trip to Aiden's farmhouse is a clear reference to when Carrie went to Aiden's Uptown Ranch. A hamburger and a cosmopolitan, please.
Oh, I love that scene so much.
Charlotte's super excited about this relationship and is like kind of encouraging like this relationship. Seema's given more side eye and she's saying, Carrie, you're looking at Norfolk, England. You clicked on the UK, bitch. Seema's had enough of Carrie's shit.
So then we kind of get, Miranda's quite at brunch, but then we get to a scene where they're just walking along the road and they're just having a little chit chat. And Miranda's very much out of her Lauren Conrad era when she didn't go to Paris, and she's got herself back onto the humanitarian internship program, which is notoriously hard to get onto. And you can tell that Miranda's just living with this kind of regret. And it's very weird because she's kind of grilling Carrie now. Like, do you feel like you're moving too fast? Do you want to take a beat? Like you move so fast that you didn't even realize you are like you were looking at a property in England, which is very stupid in my opinion. Surely you would have seen that it looks very different, and surely you would have seen that it's like in pounds, not dollars. Anyway, that's just a little night. Carrie then goes on to justify her emotions. She's saying she's orgasming like nonstop, that all the time. And then she drops a clanger that like maybe Big was a big mistake, which is quite controversial. What are your thoughts on that bit?
I just think this is like a really lazy writing, just to, as like an excuse to bring Aiden back. And like, because like the whole Michael Patrick King wanted like to make Carrie and Big end up together at the end of the show. And like Candice Bushnell, who was a real Carrie Bradshaw, never wanted like Big and her to end up together. And for them to like do a full 180 and now Big was a big mistake, it just feels like it's going against like exactly what the past like fucking last three seasons of Sex and the City. What was the point in the Mexicoma? What was the point in like the affair? What was the point in Big's death and Carrie's like getting over and she's wrote this memoir and now she's like, maybe it's a big mistake.
It's really, it's like even for those series, like even that two episodes ago when the widow con was happening, no, when she was recording her book, she couldn't even record the chapter where Big dies. Like she was on her knees sobbing every time those two men tried to force her to read a book. So it's really bizarre that now Big is a big mistake. Carrie is so fickle. Like what is going on?
I saw like somebody commented that they were like, maybe this is our way of like moving away from Chris North and like completely cutting ties with Chris North. But like, and now because they obviously want to reflect their lives in the show, like with Cynthia Nixon and Sarah Jessica Parker. But like, it just is like it. Like, why have we invested 25 years in a relationship that's just now been written out by one like really over the like one line? And it's just like it feels really, it just sums up everything about, and just like that, it's like a complete nonsensical like,
show. And it's also like really letting actors, like I know there's so, Hollywood is so problematic, there's so many bad people in Hollywood. I think you need to be a bit tapped to be famous as well. So it's just kind of like, why are you bringing that baggage in from outside, like i.e. Chris North, into the storyline if that's the case? Like people are bad, that like, you don't need to like reference them being shit outside. you don't need to always reference stuff from the outside world to make a good story, and that's what they really obsess over with Then Just Like That. Also, like, Carrie is obsessed with, like, a one big true love. Like, you remember in the first Sex and the City film when they're reading the love letters, she's so obsessed with, like, the one love of her life and one soulmate. So I think that when she's getting on so well with Aiden, she's just like, oh my God, but I can't have two, like, massive loves of my life. Like, one can't exist. So that's why she's kind of, like, banished Big. It just makes no sense. She needs to realise that there's so many, like, big loves you can have in your life, especially, like, if it's talking about, like, sex and love into being older, because, like, people, like, in relationships, like, their partners die. Like, you can have, like, multiple loves of your life, I imagine.
Yeah, totally. I feel like they could have written this without, like, completely diminishing Big as a character. It feels like really lazy writing, like, was Big a big mistake? Like, that's such a shit line.
It was very out of the blue. I don't really understand what they're trying to achieve with it. Like, were they just trying to get a bit of a rise out of the audience? And it's quite funny that you didn't get that much of a rise because there's so much random stuff happening in this episode that people didn't really care that much. But it is an odd line.
Somebody made the theory, like, that Sarah Jessica Parker's embarrassed what people took away from Carrie as a character. And Then Just Like That, it's kind of rewriting all the wrongs that Sex and the City did. And, like, is this, like, because there's so many Team Aidens, is this, like, a part of that, like, righting the wrongs of Mr. Big being this, like, toxic, masculine man that she's always chased? Miranda is, like, now queer. And, like, bringing all the people of colour into the show. And even, like, this scene where Miranda's taken the internship and last season she didn't take the internship. And it's, like, the writers are just reacting to what are people annoyed at, like, Miranda should have taken the internship last season, but now they're making her do it now. And it's like, you're just rewriting the wrongs you've done. And it's like, just commit to what you're writing rather than, like, adapting to, like,
what. And I don't think Big was a wrong for Carrie. Like, Big needed to be a bit of a prick in order to be, like, a protagonist for the show. An antagonist, sorry, for the show. But they were really well matched. Like, Carrie's really, like, into material things, likes the high life. They were perfect. And she's not entirely, like, you can see a relationship with friends. She's not that entirely empathetic or a good friend or very emotionally connected to her friends. And, like, Big would be perfectly ideal as a partner for her because Big was exactly the same.
Like, it's like the first episode of season one when they, like, have that marital bliss. And then there's, like, that beautiful light going into the flat. And the, like, and then even in Sex and City 2 when they're, like, both, like, content of not having children and stuff. And, like, her getting back with Aiden, it's like, does she, like, regret not sitting down with Aiden, having kids and stuff? And, like, obviously we'll get into it later, but Aiden was, like, pretty shitty to Carrie. Let's move on from this, because we're obviously going to get into this a lot later. Then this next scene cuts to Charlotte gathering Rock and Lily to tell them she's taking on a full-time job at the art gallery, which is great, like, a storyline we've wanted for ages. And then she's like, oh, will you miss me? And they're all like, meh. And she's like, Richard Patton, will you miss me? Finally, we get in the storyline we wanted for so long.
They have just written... So I've got a big gripe against and just like that writers of how they write Gen Z. They write Charlotte's kids to be awful. They could have been so much nicer to be like, oh, we so support you. We really appreciate that you're going back to work. Like, go on, get it, girl. Women's rights. Richard Patton looks so cute in this scene. He's given so much side eye. Moving swiftly on to Miranda, who is back in large and in charge, but in an intern position. And there's these two Gen Z girlies again, who they've just written to be such caricatures of themselves. One of them who is eating a garlic and chocolate cookie. Insane. I'm not going to let it bother me, but I'm very bothered about that situation. They kind of, I understand workplace drama and workplace competitiveness, but at the moment they're kind of like helping Miranda, but there seems to be something that's going to happen with these three. They feel a bit triggered by Miranda. And then Miranda's also a bit out of her depth because she's so much older than them. And Miranda's got this complex about aging, even though she's shit hot lawyer.
Yeah, and then, like, when her boss asks her to write notes and she's like, me? It's like, Miranda, you have 3 fucking decades of being a lawyer. Like, come on.
She graduated second at Harvard. Like, come on, the CV talks for itself.
Then Che is working at the vet and is visited by Carrie, and Carrie wants to take them for lunch. They're really driving this, like, narrative, like, the sympathy for the Che train has arrived. Che's working lunch because they're paid
one and a half
And then this really awkward line about the turtle is worried about the dog. And it's like, fucking hell, this writing is fucking shit show. Carrie's wanting to take Che to lunch to ask about subletting the apartment instead of having to Airbnb it. So when Che is subletting the apartment to Carrie, Che will stay at Carrie's apartment. But then when Carrie's staying at her apartment, Che will stay in the Hudson Yard apartment. But like, how long is this gonna go on for? Like, Aiden needs to like either like give up or like they need to move in together or like
get yeah. A new place. If I was like, Che, I'd be like, what? Actually, I think Che's maybe allowing it because they want Carrie to pay for their rent. But it's such a good deal. But it's so, when I watch this scene, I think that's when I text you again. Like, this is making no sense. Like, Carrie, just buy another apartment. You've got so much money. Like, just rebuy the apartment you and Big shared and just don't tell Aiden that it was your original apartment. And then he can suck it up and just not be a little bitch like he's been at the moment. It gets Seema to do a third apartment for Carrie. It's just such a random thing. Like, imagine just moving your stuff back and forth from like Carrie's flat in like Manhattan over to like,
yeah,
I don't know, it's only a few blocks, I imagine, but it's still. It's still faff and like sharing
bizarre. And like, yeah, I think it also just shows that like Che and Carrie's relationship is to like, it's always Carrie needs something Che, yeah, like Carrie needed Che to come to the like the Widow Con, and now Carrie needs to like, yeah, sublet her apartment. It's like this, like,
I think this is the scene where the penny dropped for me that Che's actually a main character. I just thought Che was a love interest, so that I thought they would be like treated the same as like Aiden was or like Harry was, like it'd be treated along that vein, like kind of in there and kind of like there for the plot. But now it's kind of dropped for me that, oh, Che's actually a main character and they want to actively keep them in the show and give them stuff. So they're just kind of like kind of giving them storylines that don't really make that much sense. Like, Carrie could definitely afford just to like keep sleeping in a hotel and not have to go to Che's apartment, even buy her an apartment, buy a fucking island at this point. Big was so rich. But yeah, they're just really shoehorning Che in.
Buy Manhattan.
Empire State Building. So, oh my God, finally, sweet, sweet, sweet relief when Anthony comes on screen. The bread phone is back in action. Anthony's been his sassy self. Some lady is just like begging for Giuseppe to come and deliver some bread, even though Giuseppe keeps telling her that he's gay. It's just a funny scene. He's such a good actor. I just think it's just funny. And then we can kind of get this sexual tension creeping in as Giuseppe walks in. What were your thoughts on this scene?
Giuseppe loves an older daddy. I like this scene. Giuseppe, like, I love that Giuseppe's like teasing him and he's like, oh, so you're gonna fire me because I'm gay? And then Anthony's like lying when it was like, you're being like, the way you work is like erotic. I mean, erratic. And like, it was like a cliche, but like, it's like, it feels like kind of Sex and City.
And they use that really, really, really lazy trope of that ghost like clay scene. You know, the scene where like Demi Moore, I don't remember Demi Moore from that scene, but like, it's the pottery theme that is overdone. It's just like a meme at this point, like an 80s meme. And they just brought that in. I was like, surely there's a funnier way to do this. It's just not. Half of your audience won't understand the reference of Ghost, so.
Somebody made a point that one of my friends texted me and was like, have you seen that Giuseppe comes in, knees a dough when they've just come off the streets of New York and not washed their hands?
He's going to send that dough, he's going to send that bread to that bitch who keeps calling. I know it for a fact. They'll be like, duh. Oh, like, God, yeah, so Manhattan. Ugh, creepy crawlies in there. But they're cute. Do you like them as a couple?
Yeah, I think it's good that we have like a younger and older like couple, because we haven't really seen that before, like even in Sex and City really, apart from when Samantha dates that super old man who it's ass is like,
yeah. I like them. I like this scene. I think it's a nice little ticking along and they're cute.
Then we segue into LDW shopping with Charlotte's shopping for her new job role and is like obsessed with this black dress she wants to buy with the pink belt. This feels like I don't know, like, I'm sorry, you just wouldn't wear this to all
especially it's ugliest dress of all time. It's given like Etam 2003. It's disgusting. It's like British Home Stores, like a bargain bin, vile little dress. And the audacity to pick that dress out in front of LTW, who just looks so good, so stylish.
The colour blocking in
LTW, bless LTW,
divine.
This is her only scene, I think, in the show. It only lines. But who cares? She got that 30 seconds of screen time and owned it. Who is styling Charlotte this season as well? Charlotte used to be so... She was a bit basic, I would give her that, but she was chic. She was never frumpy mom, which is this.
This feels like the... Like very Charlotte in Sex and the City movies, like
But then she was kind of a young mom there. Like you kind of lose yourself, and now it's kind of been like she's back on
That's
it.
True.
Like I think Charlotte would be so much more stylish than this.
Yeah, definitely. Then the shop assistant comes across with like less tighter clothing, and Charlotte's like, "No, this is what I'm getting."
It's so gross.
Charlotte's back home going through old photos. We finally have a reference to Samantha for the first. Of this whole season, and then I just, like it was really jarring to see this photo of the four girls, like and especially now we know like Samantha's coming up in a few episodes.
Someone was like, "Is Charlotte. This Samantha's cameo? Imagine being paid for like that iconic. She should be paid for that. It was a great little cameo."
Then Charlotte's pinning the photo on the dress she's just bought when Charlotte was like back in her 30s and had this gorge like. Black dress, and that dress is the one she needs to bring out of the cupboard. Like that would be a nice way to reference her going back into her old self. No, so somebody made a point that like Charlotte would never put a pin through her photos, like that, like Charlotte would just have such a perfect archive. Like she would never do that.
That's such a good point. Yeah, there's so many things to pick up. It's literally like a 2 second scene, but there's so much to pick apart because like Samantha's in this scene, and do you remember when they like shame Samantha for having a bit of a gut when she moved to LA?
Oh my god, yeah.
And literally there was literally like a teaspoon of fat on that woman's stomach. There was nothing, but they were just like, "She's got a gut, she's put on so much weight." And then like if Samantha was in the room right now and was talking to Charlotte, she'd be like, "Fuck off, do not care about that dress, like why are you being so extra?"
Yeah, it feels like it's such a lazy trope to like have Charlotte go back to work, but also like just like undermine this really great storyline of Charlotte going back to work. Mm-hmm. And like coming back into her like career and just undermining by her like having a like being slightly overweight, and she's not at all like, it's like, come on,
you've
already had this storyline, like you said in Sex and the City.
If anything, it would be more cool to like her being more like scared about the fashion, because fashion is like kind of gone back to Y2K, but like young people can wear Y2K and like hark back to the early noughties, but for an older woman to try that style and try style herself to be kind of like a bit younger looking is more interesting than being like, "Oh, I'm fat," when she's not fat.
Such a lazy trope.
Yeah, so then we move on to we're back with Carrie and Aiden. Clap if you care.
Silence.
We did a poll this week about Carrie and Aiden, and we asked if they were siblings or dating. There was an overwhelming response that they were siblings. We can now confirm that Aiden has said that they are cousins, so no one won that, but thank you for participating in the poll. And they're just snogging in the elevator as cousins. And then
They love an elevator scene.
Also, can we please notice that Aiden is wearing that disgusting jacket, but is probably told by Carrie to take the belt off because it was vile. So thank
they love
God.
Belts on the show.
Yeah. And then we've got a nosy neighbour coming out of 18D, and they're just really over-explaining the whole situation. They really don't need to over-explain the situation. Like, Che would have told the neighbour that they're putting their flat on, like, Airbnb, all good, all fine. And they're just really over the top. And then what they call themselves, Janet and Steve or something like that.
Yeah.
Very over the top, very cringe, unnecessary. Well, I was making, I think, food at this time, so I don't really care about these two. And they make their way in this apartment, and then this is their like idea of domestic bliss. They walk into this apartment, which they'll call their own, for like 3 working days every 2 weeks, because Aiden has to go back to Norfolk, Virginia. And then like Aiden's so offended there's no pepper mill and there's no forks, which is crazy because Che is a person of colour, and Che should have seasonings and food utensils, and being a person of colour and being a massive weed smoker, hence munchies, why did they not have any basic food related things in their kitchen? Very bizarre. Carrie kind of lets that go, but is very offended that there's only a handful of wire hangers in the closet. So they're both going through a bit. What did you think of this?
Yeah, I kind of can't be honest with this whole like couple at all. And like, I would never could you ever predict like them two moving into like Sibla and Che's apartment, like, a few episodes ago. Like, it feels so fucking random.
This is, yeah, when I first watched it, it's like, what is, why? And did they write this apartment situation for the whole thing of Carrie going and then sharing it with Aiden? Like, what was first, the apartment or the situation where Aiden didn't want to go? Very baffling. Did they just shoehorn this Hudson Yards apartment in? Because it's playing a massive role. It's got a bigger role in this series than Naya has at the moment. So it's supposed to be doing something. It's there for a reason.
Everything is so nonsensical, so I would be surprised if they thought this through. Like, I think it just worked well in them. Like, it doesn't even work well. Like, they were just like, oh, okay, we'll just do this because we've already built a set, so we can just shove them in that apartment so we don't have to build another set.
They also said on the Writers' Room podcast, you know, you get those crime scene walls which are, like, attached by, like, red string. They say they have one of those for, like, the characters and the storylines, and I just feel at this point they're just shooting darts with a red string attached to it and just seeing what kind of fits together, because it's all just so random and not well thought out at all.
Yeah. Then we're with Seema in work, which is fab to see. Seema's come gets her big old faggot boss coming over to her, telling she needs somebody to find this A-list Marvel actor apartment for 9 months. And then, so obviously, like, this A-list actor, Marvel actor, is going to be Seema's apparent love interest. But, like, I feel like they didn't need to do the scene. Like, they could have prolonged the storyline of Seema and Carrie, like, having this discussion about the we.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, later on it just gets resolved and it's, like, really boring. And, like, this Ravi Gadore character seems, like, he is not hot, he's not sexy, he's has this awful British accent. Like, I feel like Seema would not be into him.
Yeah, I agree with you on the fact that, like, it would be nice to just, when Seema has a scene later on, which we'll touch on in a bit, it would be nicer to have that kind of, like, not safety blanket of this fella being in her life. So, yeah, I think it was, yeah, a bit premature, exactly, bringing this character in. And also, people are saying, like, Marvel, they don't shoot in New York. It's far too expensive to shoot those films. They're usually, like, shot in Vancouver so or, like, in the big North American city. Again, yeah, just random storylines, not very well selected. And that office is so ugly. What's with the crush velvet? Okay, we then move back to Miranda being bullied by 18-year-olds. Miranda sits down with a massive Kim Kardashian-style salad. And I don't think has really interrupted anything, but she's come bearing gifts. Garlic and chocolate chip cookies again. Where are they getting these cookies? Are they yummy? Are they a thing? And then the two girls seem very not happy that Charlotte's there and make it very clear that they're texting about her via iMessage, WeChat, Snapchat, fuck it, Threads. They're probably live tweeting it.
It's definitely like a boomer writing about Gen Z, like, as if Gen Z would, like, literally text with their, like, sound on. You can hit, like, Miranda's even like, are you guys, I feel like you guys had texted about me.
Yeah, like, no, it's so weird. And these two, they're obviously really intelligent girls working for, like, this, like, humanitarian, like, really important organization. A, if they really care about people, they would not be bullying an older woman in the workplace. B, yeah, they must understand how, like, their career, like, their place that they work works. Like, Miranda's got so much experience. It's not about her being privileged. It's about her CV just being better. They've just written them to be so stupid, and I don't think people of that age would be that stupid. They'd understand the nuances of, like, someone older coming into the workplace.
Yeah.
Say no to bullying, kids.
Then we go to Charlotte again, fucking underlining, like, she has a bit, like, her little belly, and then she's been on the broth diet all week. It's like, come on, like, fuck off, like, I'm sick of this shitty storyline. Or even, like, Kristen Davis, like, she's so funny, but, like, it's just something so tragic about this storyline. Mm. Like, it's just not funny.
I think I was doing something, so I was listening to this episode more than watching it, and now I'm actually watching it. She's got no belly. She's literally just nothing. So normally sized, like, so skinny. Like, especially since the camera supposedly adds a few pounds anyway, she must be so mini in real life. This is so triggering, and it does kind of border on, like, eating disorder chat when she talks about the bone broth. Like, she'd drink bone broth and then drop the 5 pounds. That's, like, 1,000% disordered eating. Like, no one can survive off bone broth like that. And especially, like, we're living in a time of, like, clean eating at the moment, and everyone thinking, like, being natural and, like, vegan is good, but actually it's, like, a veil for, like, not,
yeah, especially if the show wants to be progressive or something, and then they're, like, mm-hmm, literally just amplifying this like disordered ego.
We move over back to my favorite place on earth, Heads and Yards. And the snitch of a neighbor has now run into Brad and Jane. And I think he's got a bit of a thing going on. Either he just hates Aidan and Carrie, which I totally understand and I agree with him, or he just like is very concerned about Che's apartment. Either way, weird that he ends up ringing Che to tell them that their apartment has been infiltrated by these random like couple who keeps changing their names.
I did have this Airbnb debacle when me and Pete were in LA. The Airbnb host said, if anybody, any of the neighbours ask you, just say, you're my cousin. And as soon as we went in, I was like, I feel so uncomfortable now. And the couple next door to asked us, like, is this Airbnb? And we were like, no, no. So it is a thing. Like, it's just...
And then Che's obviously trying out some nice skincare in Carrie's apartment. Carrie doesn't strike me as a skincare...
I saw Che in Carrie's apartment. I was like, ew! Get out!
I'm going to say something really controversial, but... I quite like Che in these scenes. I thought it was actually the first time I actually like enjoyed watching Che. Like, it was quite a funny scene, like just trying on the eye mask and then marching over to the apartment and then being quite blunt, like, what is this?
Yeah, I feel like Che is being given like the redemption arc this season.
Mm-hmm.
And Che is actually like more interesting than anything that Carrie's doing at the minute.
Yeah, and I think Che does work well as just like a normal cat when you treat them like a normal character and just give them good storylines or like let them allow. Give them be facilitated to make the plot line move along versus some giving them like some fuckboy storyline, which I think made people turn against them, really.
Yeah. Then Che meets Aidan at the apartment, and Aidan's like showing off their new tongs and pepper grinder. And then Che's asking about what happened to Aidan and Carrie's relationship. And then Carrie makes this fucking statement that she made a mistake. And they like hug, and then Che looks super like pensive, and I was just like, please don't put Che and Miranda back together.
Yeah, and, like, that was my first thought as well.
And like they're really awkward. Like it just feels like Che is such an awkward third wheel in this scene. But then when like Carrie admits to making a mistake, like in the writers' room, they say that Carrie takes responsibility for what she did to Aidan. But I was also like, Aidan was such a prick to Carrie. He gave her an ultimatum and he was like, we're gonna go get married right now. And then it was all like way too much for Carrie. And when he kissed Carrie in Abu Dhabi, he had like a 2-year-old at home. It's like, no, Aidan was like very just not right for Carrie. Like Carrie was never in the wrong. Like it just wasn't right at the time.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't.
Carrie taking the blame. It's like, it goes against everything like Sex and the City was for. It's like being for single fab women.
Yeah, she was well in her rights to say no to that whole thing and just be like, no. Also, for them to say like regret and stuff, like it's just like wrong place, right person, wrong time. And also, Aidan can't, the way he hugged Carrie after she said, oh, I really regret that, it's like, you have got so many kids and had like really good marriage, I imagine, for like 15 odd years. You cannot say that you regret, like agree with her regret, because you've had such hopefully a nice life and you've got kids. I hope no one ever says that they regret having me as a child, because they wanted to hang out with Carrie. Right, so we are back in a salon. Salons play a big key part in this. They're always getting their hair done. Good for them. And Seema is getting her hair washed in her basin right next to Carrie, and she notices and then tries to sneak back. And Sarah, Carrie's like, oh, hey, lady. And I think the penny's slowly dropping for Carrie that Seema is very much avoiding her. And I think this leads to a really, really good scene. Actually, I really enjoy this scene. Like, you know that, like, there's something been brewing in Seema and she's ready to kind of, like, share it with Carrie now. And Carrie has just been so aloof and just not aware. So Seema's like, I need a cig. Let's go out and stand in the rain. And you know it's a deep chat when they're, like, willing to go stand in the rain on, like, a busy road with wet hair. Very stressful. I think Seema's well in her rights to set this boundary, and I do think that it was really out of pocket for Carrie to just completely forget this whole Hamptons trip, and for Carrie to say, like,
so
Carrie was like, oh, you didn't tell me that you like cancelled the Hamptons trip, and then Seema's like, yeah, of course, how would she not have, like, she's well in her rights not to tell you if you just weren't communicating with her and you also forgot the trip. Like, imagine Seema could have like cancelled this trip and Carrie probably wouldn't have realized if she didn't even remember the trip full stop. I just find Carrie, like, oh, surprisingly, I find Carrie really infuriating, but I'm very much on Seema's side. And I do understand, like, it's so easy. It's so nice to hang out with, like, your, like, best friend's partners, and that's totally fine. But then if you planned a girl's holiday, that extra baggage and that extra reminder that maybe you haven't had a relationship in a while is a bit, it's not annoying. It's not jealousy. It's just more like, oh, it was a girl's holiday. And that's a very different energy to when you bring a partner along. So,
yeah, it's like anything, like, if one friend achieves something else that somebody wants to achieve, like, doesn't even have to be a partner or something, they're like, it's still hard to deal with, especially if it's a, like, something you can, like, visually see, like Aiden being there. Then Seema's basically saying she just needs space and, like, time apart, and then Carrie's like, no, and, like, obviously this is referencing Samantha, like, Samantha is not part of this circle anymore for good reason. And then Carrie's asking, like, Seema's asking for space, but, like, Carrie literally asked Aiden for space, and, like, that's what, like, broke them up.
Yeah, for sure. Also,
and, like, Carrie's just not giving her the space.
I don't think they needed to include that Seema has not had a lover in her life. She's actually just okay to be like, I don't want to hang out with this fella that I've never met, and that you're just, like, just gonna have sex with the whole time, because that's all they're doing. They're just fucking nonstop, and you just do not want to hang out with that the whole holiday. So we're in Charlotte's closet now, and I swear they've put something on her to make her look bigger for this scene, because she is not that big, and they're just really making this whole big caper about her putting these Spanx on. Granted, Spanx are difficult to put on, they're just in the nature that they're just hard to pull up, but she's making such a song and dance about this, and he's, like, visibly winded by these Spanx. She doesn't need to put all this drama into going back to work, I don't think. And her kids just look at her like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I feel like it'd be better to see her prepare, like, for the job rather than, like, thinking about being skinny for the job.
And also just think about how crap that dress is. Just go back, look in the mirror, don't look at your body, just look at the dress and tell me that you think that dress is cute. You're lying if you think it is. It's disgusting.
Giuseppe joins Anthony, and Anthony's like, you don't work here anymore, like, that's it. Then Giuseppe goes in for the big old kiss. And then Anthony's like, I'm fucked, because he doesn't want to snog his co-worker. And then Giuseppe's like, not yet. Very Samantha line. Then we go into Charlotte outside the gallery for her first day, and Charlotte takes off the belt as she steps in to the gallery, and she meets Anastasia and Skye. And then,
oh, thank God she takes that awful belt off, though.
So, Charlotte meets Layla, who is, I think, Charlotte's boss, or somebody higher in the art gallery. And Charlotte is like, oh, I can take my shapewear off. Like, I've never seen... She's like, I'm so comfortable because this woman is comfortable in her body. And it's like, oh my God, this is such a... Like, this trope of Charlotte being overweight. And it's like... Has Charlotte never met, like, an overweight person before? And she's, like, throwing all of her Spanx away and shit. And it's like, this is the most depressing scene of this show, I think, so far.
This was a horrible scene. I just thought it was so distasteful. Awful,
so
awful, awful
so
scene.
So distasteful.
Like, so gross. Like, how, like, rude is that to be like, oh, I feel comfortable now because I feel like I'm the skinnier person in the room. Like, it gave off that energy. I'm not sure if it's written
That's
to
so
be like
true.
That, but I think I read it like
really
that
does.
And I also felt that a lot of people on Twitter were also saying it as well. It was just really distasteful. Like, I can understand if she felt more confident, because, like, when she walks in, the two girlies that are like, oh, like, nice to meet you, like, we've heard great things, like, maybe she's just like, oh, why am I letting my looks overtake my achievements and stuff like that. But it is literally the penny. she changes her mind as soon as she sees someone who's, like, a bit, like, differently shaped, and, like you said, like, she's just not used to seeing. There's no bigger people in Sex and the City. There was, like, Jennifer Hudson in the films, but other than that, there's, and, like, Carrie's publicist, or, like, her manager, whatever it is, and the she pops up, and she's iconic when she does pop up. But yeah, it's just a bit just really distasteful. I did not like that scene. I could have done without that scene. Moving on to another girl who's back in the workplace, we've got Miranda working late, and I think she asks one of her co-work interns if they could just, like, send over some migration stats. And they're like, oh, Miranda, perfect Miranda, flagging it, which I don't, again, don't think people would do that. If you're working as part of like a big project, which is for the greater good, you would not be a bit, throw a hissy fit and be like, it's a bit snarky about a migration stat. And that makes Miranda feel a bit weird. And then Miranda's boss comes out and says that you're not allowed to work here after six, which is quite a cool rule. I think that's a very fair rule, especially for the organisation they work in. And then something quite exciting happens to Miranda. Miranda gets some good news at last. I was actually really chuffed for Miranda in this scene. Her manager asked her if she wants to take over for her when she's on maternity leave, because she's like literally going to be induced in the next hour. And it's just really nice to see like Miranda has deserved this. And I did see a few comments about people saying like, oh, privilege, that Miranda's just walked in and she's like got this job already. It's like, Miranda... we've said this so many times in this podcast, but she's got 3 decades of experience. We're really glad.
That's a privilege.
Yeah, just because she took a break doesn't mean she has to start back from like day dot. And Miranda just seems to be going like 1 step forward, 7 steps back. So it's nice for her to be on that the up like the front foot for once, and be like thriving. Definitely. Yeah.
Then we cut to dinner with the girls and Aidan. And they're joking about the chicken still.
Oh,
still
God.
Understand this chicken joke. Then we have the rival Seema, and she's looking fucking amazing. Then, like, it's just a bit, like, lazy writing. Like, something like this story arc would, like, go over a few episodes in Sex and City when, like, Carrie and Miranda would have an argument. It would, like, take a few episodes for them to come back together. But, like, seamlessly, Seema is happy for them and is going all up for their relationship now. And it's just completely lady writing. But I feel like Seema really integrates into the group better than any of the other girls, because we've obviously had not had Naya this episode, barely had LTW touched upon. And then the episode ends just like that. I went to Aidan's farm. It wasn't Howard's end, it was better. It was our new beginning. And like the longest and just like that, and like I feel like it was such a shit and just like that, like everything was wrapped up in this one episode. Like, it's such a big jump to go from Carrie like being single, then like the last episode, then going on a date with Aidan at the end of last episode, to now being in a committed, basically like a committed relationship where she's willing to meet his kids, and like she's like a completely different Carrie Bradshaw. And like, and now like Seema's happy for her, and like everything is just slot together really nicely at the end. And it's like, is it because like the seasons are shorter, because there's only like 10 or 11 episodes this season, that they have to wrap up things really quickly in that episode? It just feels like it cheats you out of like story arcs that could go on and be much more interesting, like Seema's like fraught relationship with Carrie, or I don't know, it just feels incredibly lazy.
Yeah, like they've really like shortened random things. Like we were talking about how they just haven't touched upon Naya this episode, but then they also didn't really explain Naya's relationship falling apart. And then like with Seema, like she's always like really odds and sods fellas, and they get really wrapped up quite quickly.
And like Seema and Carrie's relationship is always like so one-sided. Like Seema found her a new apartment, got her in contact with her brother for her like hip surgery, supported her through grief, then was up for this Hamptons trip, and Carrie's like just given her nothing, and like seemingly like Carrie's got away with treating Seema like shit.
Yeah, and it's just really short term. But I feel like with this, I feel like, are they gonna have, because they've got 3 more episodes, because they're 11 episodes a season, I feel like they have to do a bit of a bump in the road with her and Aidan. Like when she gets to Norfolk, Virginia, what's gonna happen? Is it gonna be like bliss, or is she gonna run into this whole thing like when she went to his shack last time and it was just not what she thought it would be?
I kind of feel like they're just gonna wrap up this season. Like season 3 is probably not gonna happen, and like they've managed to bring Kim Cattrall back for a quick cameo, and they're just gonna wrap up. Like Carrie ended up with Aidan in the end, because this show's not, I can't really imagine the season, like the next season being renewed. And if it does, like where are they gonna go with it? Like I feel like it just makes sense to wrap it up. Carrie ended up with Aidan, moved to Virginia, and just like that was over.
No, that makes sense.
I don't know, I just don't understand where this show is going. And then especially with like the Naya storyline, like Miranda's living with Naya and it's had like no impact in the show, and like she doesn't feel integrated in the show at all. Like it's probably because Naya was supposed to originally be Miranda's love interest, and now like that storyline mm-hmm. arc isn't there for Naya, so like she's just like wafting in the background. Like her character has literally, she made a souffle this season and Miranda moved in with her and that was it.
Yeah, it's very odd. Yeah, like literally again, like the Che Carey thing, it's like a vehicle to give one of the main characters a place to stay versus actually just being a good character. Very odd.
Yeah.
What would you rate this out of 10 Richard Burton paws? Why has he got... Do dogs have 10 paws? Anyway, what would you rate out of 10 Richard doggy treats? There we go.
I feel like there's exciting developments that's going on in this episode. Is like obviously like thrown so many storylines that will maybe get more interesting as the show goes, but I feel like maybe like 3.5 doggy treats out of 10.
Out of 10? Wow. I didn't expect that.
I think it just the writing was so shoddy, like trying to wrap up everything in this one episode. Carrie's back with Aiden seamlessly. Seamus forgiving Carrie easily. Charlotte's fat when she's not. Miranda has like taken this internship and somehow got a promotion like within one episode. It just feels super lazy. Feels like they're rushing to get the end of the season, just being like, okay, we're done. The show's finished.
Actually, that's so true. They shouldn't have hired Miranda as an intern. They should have just been like, hey, Miranda, you apply for this internship, but you're so good, we want you to just come in on the Matt Lee replacement. Like, why did they do the whole rigmarole of the internship? Because then it does make it feel like she's just, it's really random. Versus it being like, oh, Miranda gets into this Matt Lee position and then she gets a bit of imposter syndrome because it's just like 0 to 100 versus building her way up. Yeah. Sorry, just thought I'd say that. I would probably agree. I'd probably give it 3, only because I thought the Seema and Carrie scene was good. I just hate the Aiden and Carrie scenes. Like SJP's acting is just not very nice to watch. It's just a bit too like woo.
Yeah, I feel like even SJP feels awkward acting these lines.
Maybe
Big was a big mistake. And it's like, oh my God, you've literally fought to have Big as the end game for Carrie. And now you've just completely ripped that apart. It just feels like such a waste of 25 years of amazing writing.
Yeah. And also, Rock throws an iPhone at Richard Burton. So I deducted points for that because we don't like Richard Burton being hurt.
Oh my God. I hope Richard Burton fucking does a Naomi and grabs it back and throws it fucking back at Rock.
We need to call the NSPCA on these people. Arrest them immediately.
I have no idea what's going to happen in episode 9, but we will be here.
Are they going to shoot will they shoot it in Norfolk? Do you think Carrie's going to like end up in some kind of thing that she ends up on a bus back to New York because she just can't afford to buy a plane back? She's got no money.
I was so excited for the Hamptons trip. Like, I feel like they need a trip, and like, I don't want to go to fucking Aiden's ranch to meet his 3 kids. Like, so boring. Or like, maybe they need something where like Carrie's like, okay, Aiden, we need to like take some space, and like, I need to take time with Seema and have a relationship with her, and like, we should go out on holiday or something. Like, it's just so dull now, and like, I just don't understand like how Samantha's voice call is going to play into this, because Samantha's not been referenced this entire season, whereas she was referenced throughout season 1, and like they were fun texts to have. And I don't know, it just feels everything's really under considered because they're just rushing to get this show over with because it's underperforming. Like, mm-hmm. and like Samantha Irby's obviously the only talented writer in this show.
Yeah, agreed. Do you think, or maybe like Samantha's brought in when like Aiden and Carrie break up again, and like Carrie's just like,
that's true.
And then assesses everything and then calls Samantha.
And just like that. We'll be back next week.
Oh, do you think next week? I think next week's episode is going to be a bit of a clanger, so I'm quite excited.
Michael Patrick King's not writing the next episode, so it might be a little bit better. But So in the writer's room episode, they also said it's kind of like having too many chefs in a kitchen. It's like, you had 3 people write on this episode. That's way too many people to write one episode. And you could tell, like, they're like, that's why it was mm-hmm. so, like, all over the place. Like, it didn't feel considered or... Yeah, so next episode is, like, the 2 writers who wrote this episode with Michael Patrick King, but without Michael Patrick King, because he obviously wants to write the last 2 episodes of the season. So, scary mm-hmm. times. Do you think you'd be sad if the show ended?
I am of a very much school of thought that I think I want it to last forever because it's just so, I love to hate it. and I do like doing this podcast.
I like the discourse around the show.
Yeah, me too. I think it would be so nice if it was a good show. But I don't think having Carrie as a central character and it being a good show is a thing. I think they need to either get Carrie out, or I don't know. I think she just makes it. Well, rewrite her.
It has all like the building blocks of making it like an amazing show, but they just aren't able to put it together. Like,
agreed. Even that the pace of the show, if they changed the pace and threw the voiceover back in, it would just be such a nicer show. Like the chat that Miranda and Carrie had, like when they're walking down talking about Aiden and like the new job, those kind of park scenes or street scenes were so nice to watch, and you kind of like felt like you go along with the story. But with that scene, it's like, oh, this is just so fast and so random. Like, what are these two things that finally happened out of nowhere?
Honestly.
So, don't get it. And we need to get Charlotte out of the house. We never see her except for in that apartment or like...
Yeah, I wonder how her job storyline is going to play out.
Like, remember, she's too obsessed with running and just doing stuff and like just being a bit more like out there and fun.
But, yeah. Okay, we'll see you next week, guys. Thanks to listen to and just see like what oh and remember to follow our Instagram and just like what, and please submit any of your theories or thoughts on this episode and the series as a whole.
We love you.
Bye. Ciao.